sports can be a real joke. And this is the punchline. It's the Jocularity Show, the train wreck where sports meets comedy head on. Now, here are your hosts, Rick Aaron and David Wilmer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Jocularity Show. I'm Rick Aaron.
And I am the David Wilbur.
The David Wilbur, and this is the most important podcast that you are listening to right now. It is the most relevant because you're listening to it right now. Today, we're going to be talking about March Madness as the teams dwindle down toward the Final Four in Indianapolis. We're also going to be talking about the passing of a legend, former Utah Jazz announcer Hot Rod Hundley, passing away at the age of 80. We will also play a round of Sport, Not a Sport, and we will have some tweets of the week, but we're going to start with a local controversy here in the Salt Lake City area. We're talking about a former Jazz player, the Undercanter, the Istanbul, Ennis the Menace. Sometimes when he played defense, he was the Phantom Ennis. Ennis Kanter comes back with his current team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and just rips the Jazz organization. Dave, what did you think about his comments?
I didn't like Ennis's comments. I think that we were kind of bogus and unprofessional, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they had a shoot around before their game, and the local media, of course, all wanted their chance to talk to Ennis, their first time to interview him since he was traded over the All-Star break. Played here for 3.5 years with the Jazz, and you would kind of expect somewhat of a veteran player like that to have the right response. You know, yeah, I had a great time here. I was lucky to play for the fans here. I enjoyed my teammates here. But no, Kanter just opened up with both barrels, saying he never liked playing here. He didn't think the organization was professional. And it was a frustrating experience for him. Not just one or two games, but the entire 3.5 years was frustration for him.
Yeah, the entire 3.5 years was frustration. Like you said, the Jazz were an unprofessional organization. You know, I as a Utah Jazz fan, I'm upset what he had to say. But as a sports fan, I like that he said it because he's not just spitting out random stuff for the media to get. He's not just saying, yeah, it was good playing here. I had a good time. I missed the state, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if he was 100% truthful and honest, but you said he's a veteran player, but he's 22 years old, so he is kind of immature, and he has a very immature agent as well.
Never played college basketball, of course, signed to play at Kentucky, never played for the Wildcats, came into the NBA as an 18-year-old phenom, and had some good moments and some bad moments here in Utah. I'll always remember him for his outlandish outfits and his outrageous tweets, inviting young women to join him for a post-game meal at the Cheesecake Factory and things like that. He was a goofy dude.
No, he was goofy. That was entertaining on my end. I liked he did that. The pictures that he would post in the off-season with him at the beach and these girls in the bikinis and how he's just living it up, basically. I liked that part of him.
And he loved wrestling. He liked The Undertaker, hence the Undercanter nickname and stuff. Here's what he said. He said, quote, "I think the difference is probably I like playing basketball there," meaning Oklahoma City. Resume his quote, "That's the most important thing. Never liked playing basketball in my NBA career. That's my first time I start like playing basketball there for my team, for the fans, for my teammates, for coaches, everybody. That is the first time." Asked what his problem was with the Jazz organization in Salt Lake City, he said, it wasn't a one or two game frustration. It was a 3.5 year frustration. I would say almost everything when asked what the problem was. So this is just a bitter guy, obviously. I guess he thought he was supposed to be the star from day one, and he wasn't. He was a young player with a lot of potential and a developing player, but he wasn't an all-star level player, and he was a defensive liability, and he was a cancer in the locker room, apparently, because he brought everybody down. The Jazz have been much better without him.
The Jazz have been much better without him, and the players in the last game against Oklahoma City were acknowledging him as the former player, a former player, is what Gordon Hayward was calling him, and other teammates were calling him that as well. He was a cancer, but for 3.5 years, if you're unhappy after even the first year, why continue for the next 2.5? Why not bring it up to the organization now that you're not happy and let's make some changes?
I don't know what he thought his role was supposed to be. I mean, he was, he got a lot of minutes, but I don't know if he expected superstar treatment or what. But it was apparent that he wanted out. He was working on getting out of Salt Lake City. He knew even before the All-Star break that he was going to be dealt. He told everyone goodbye before they left for the All-Star break. Here's the thing, though. Every time I've left a job, I've always been taught, and I've followed this, that you look the person in the eye and you shake their hand. You say, thank you for the opportunity. Good luck in the future. And you walk out of there with your head held high. And, I mean, I've worked at a number of places. I know I've worked at 5 different television stations, and however I ended up leaving there, that's what I did. Because it's a small world, especially the National Basketball Association. It's a very small pool of teams and players and organizations. You're going to be running into the same people over and over again. Why burn bridges like this?
Yeah, I'm not sure why he chose to do that. It is entertaining. It's a great national story right now. And I don't know if Ennis is going to hang on in Oklahoma City or if he's going to be bouncing around from team to team, but comments like this are going to come back and hurt him when it comes to contract year.
Oh, they're going
to
bite him in the ass because it shows immaturity. And also these players that he didn't enjoy playing with, Derek Favors, Gordon Hayward, for example, out of many, he's going to end up on the same team with one of these guys down the road in the future. He's only 22. Those guys are young also. They're going to cross paths again. Or maybe he's going to run into a coach like Tyrone Corbin or Quinn Snyder, end up playing for one of those guys with a different organization, or run into a GM like Dennis Lindsay. And it's going to be awkward when he has to think back to the comments that he made in March of 2015.
Absolutely. And then if he runs into that GM again and he gets traded again and meet the first day after Dennis Lindsay gets hired on elsewhere, see you later, Cantor.
And the funny thing is, I mentioned the Jazz have played a lot better. I mean, not just a little bit better, a whole lot better. They've been a different team since he left. These guys are all responding to Quinn Snyder and his system. They're playing like a weight has been lifted off their shoulders. They've been so much better defensively, and they've been winning a lot. And they go out after Cantor's comments and they have the last laugh because the Jazz defeat Oklahoma City 94-89, 18 points and 11 rebounds for Cantor. But besides that, nobody else except Russell Westbrook, who had 37, did much for the Thunder. The Jazz got double-digit performances from Trey Burke, Rudy Gobert, Gordon Hayward, Trevor Booker. And Booker had some great things to say after the game about Cantor in his comments. Said, yeah, it fired us up. We wanted to kick his butt. And they did.
Yeah, and they did. Absolutely. That's what I love is that the Jazz now, they're saying what's on their mind. They're not just saying, well, yeah, it's tough to play against a former teammate. Good to see him, yada, yada, yada. They're saying, yeah, he pissed us off and he pissed the fans off. We wanted to kick their butt and that's what we did.
See, Dave likes the candor. He doesn't like the canned responses, the, yeah, you know, it was great, what you would expect them to say, what they've been coached up by their advisors and agents. He likes the honest, raw emotion of the NBA. I got to say I like it, too. It's not particularly smart for the reasons I just outlined, because he's going to run into these same people again, and this, what he said, you know, can and will be held against him. So Cantor is gone. Where does he fall in the most hated guys in Utah? You're a big-time Jazz fan. I'm not. So you've got, like, Michael Jordan, who defeated them in the finals in 97 and 98.
And he pushed off Brian Russell.
Yes, as people tell me on a daily basis here. What's it been, 17 years? And they still say every day, Jordan pushed off. Or you've got a guy like Derek Fisher, who played here, was good here, but then a lot of people thought he lied to get out of here and used his daughter's cancer as an excuse to leave.
Yeah, Derek Fisher pissed off a lot of fans because they think that he may have taken advantage of Larry Miller, because Larry H. Miller was such a great person. In business, out of business, just walking around, he was a great guy. And he would put family first, and Derek Fisher said, hey, I got to put my family first. This is my situation. And Larry went with it and helped Derek Fisher out, and then Derek Fisher goes off and signs with the Lakers.
Yeah, and who else would do that besides Larry H. Miller, the late owner of the Jazz? He had a big heart, And Fisher went to him and spoke to him man-to-man, apparently. And who else releases a guy from a contract? I mean, that would never happen with any other ownership, any corporate entity or family entity that owns an NBA or a professional sports franchise. Just let one of your best players walk free and clear.
Right. I don't
know. To go to a rival. To a division rival.
Exactly. I don't know who would do it outside of the Miller family, because they're great people. They're a family. They just love each other and they love other people. And Larry H. Miller loved Utah, and he was going to help him out. And then Derek Fisher screws him.
Well, yeah. And I mean, yeah, his daughter had cancer and she needed treatment. But we've got the Huntsman Cancer Center right here in Salt Lake City,
yep,
about 2 miles up the hill from where Derek made his living there. So I'm not sure he got booed, criticized. I mean, he became public enemy number one here for a while when he would come back.
He still is, in my opinion. He still is, absolutely. It was just a douchebag move to do, because everybody loves Larry H. Miller. I think it's more about what he did for Larry H. Miller and what Larry H. Miller did for him. And then to turn around and say, screw you guys, is where it really pissed off a lot of the fans.
Yeah. I liked Derek. I covered him in Los Angeles when he was with the Lakers the first time. I covered him here in Utah. He was just such a class act. He was such a great locker room presence, you know? So I was disappointed when he did that, because I kind of saw the same thing. It's like, look, if your daughter needs treatment, you can, there's other things you can do. You can get treatment here. You can fly back and forth to wherever she is. And of course, that's first and foremost. But to use that as kind of an excuse to go play back in Los Angeles, yeah, didn't sit too well with me. So Ennis, he gets introduced, he gets booed by the fans, and he puts the hands up in the air and says, like, bring it on. He makes the gesture. He
puts his hands behind his ears as well. They say, come on, bring it louder.
And Thunder head coach Scott Brooks says that Cantor will be talked to about that. He will be disciplined for that, because Brooks says there's no place for that in his organization, you know, just taunting the fans. I mean, these are the fans that cheered for the guy who bought his jerseys, who supported him and the team, and he had some very up and down performances, and the fans here are so loyal, they stuck by him pretty much no matter what, mm-hmm, until the very end.
And then he comes out and says those things and then tries to egg on the crowd. Every time he touched the ball, the fans were booing him. Get to the free throw line and miss, the crowd would erupt. It was phenomenal at the Energy Solutions Arena.
And I don't know if you noticed this, but none of the Jazz players would shake his hand. They walked to the tip-off circle before the game. They shook hands with the other four starters from the Thunder and just completely ignored Ennis.
Phenomenal. Yeah. I love it.
Just a big diss, a big slap in the face. We will get to more Ennis Cantor talk, because he'll be coming back in our Tweets of the Week. But talk about an emotional couple of days for the Utah Jazz and their fans. On Friday, unfortunately, we had the passing of legendary Jazz play-by-play man Hot Rod Hunter. I mean, this guy, correct me if I'm wrong, he's got to be one of the most beloved guys ever in the state of Utah.
Oh, absolutely he is.
I mean, okay, you've got Malone, you've got Stockton, you've got Mitt Romney, and you've got Thomas S. Monson, the president and prophet of the LDS Church, a beloved figure. But Hot Rod has to be up there in the top five, right?
Hot Rod has to be in the top five, because everybody knows who Hot Rod Hundley is in the state of Utah. He's got to be up there. You can mention Jerry Sloan in the same with all those great names that you mentioned, Rick. Hot Rod was an amazing guy. Outside of the basketball arena, inside the basketball arena, you could be driving down the 15 freeway listening to a Jazz game, and you could truly understand what was happening in the game, who was where on the court, which way they were going on the court, who had the ball. You just knew every aspect of the game when Hot Rod Hundley was calling it.
Because he was a former player. He was one of the first former players to assume a play-by-play broadcasting position. He started out as a color commentator, as most former players do, and he transitioned into a play-by-play guy, and he did it very well. And he had his, you know, You Gotta Love It, Baby, and his leaping leaners, and his, what was it, the soft touch or the cowhide globe?
The soft touch and the mild arc, the cowhide globe hits home.
Exactly. See, that's what,
absolutely. Everybody knows. Everybody that's my age, 30 years and older, knows everything Hot Rod would say. Like, when you get fouled on the shot, it's good if it goes. It's gone. I loved it, man. God, he got into the games, and that's what I loved about him, is he was so exciting to listen to.
I had a unique experience with Hot Rod because I grew up in South Mississippi, and my dad would occasionally take us to a New Orleans jazz game. This is at the Superdome back in the day, and we would listen to Hot Rod on the radio. When you were driving into town, you would turn on the broadcast. He'd be doing the pregame and everything as you went downtown and got parked. And hearing that voice, and I knew who he was, you know, and my dad would say, oh, yeah, that's Hot Rod Hundley, you know, he's a former player. And so listening to him in the backseat of my dad's Chevy Malibu as a kid, okay, then fast forward, you know, 30 years, and I'm here as an adult, I'm working in the media in Salt Lake City, and, you know, he's always at the jazz games, you run into him, you meet him, you introduce yourself, he's very likable, pleasant, friendly man, and then you would interview him for various stories, he would have milestones, he would break, you know, some record, he'd call his, you know, 5,000th, 10,000th game, whatever it was, and you'd go interview him and stuff, and he was always very pleasant, affable, just, you know, slap you on the back, shake your hand, tell you funny stories and everything like that. And then when I did afternoon radio on 1320, which was the jazz flagship station at the time, he was our jazz correspondent. So we would give him a call every day at 4 o'clock when they were on the road and check in with him, see what was going on with him and the team and everything like that. So to go from a kid listening to him to an adult, I wouldn't call myself a colleague of his, but, you know, working with him in a sense, it gave me kind of a unique perspective of him. And I will say this, there will never, ever be another Hot Rod Hundley.
No, there won't.
Because you could, I mean, in this day and age, you couldn't get away with the way he was, you know? I mean, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely, I know what you mean.
Because, I mean, he was a character. He was larger than life, you know? Nowadays, it's so corporate. They would rein somebody in like that. They'd be like, "Hey, don't use those catchphrases. No, don't get so excited. Don't yell and scream like that and stuff like that." They would try to, you know, put you into that broadcaster type box.
Yeah, right.
But you couldn't do that with Hot Rod.
No, because he wouldn't allow you to do it. He wouldn't let you do that to him. He called the game because he was a fan of the game, and he let you know it. He got into it when the Jazz made a stupid play. He would let you know. You know. When the Jazz made a great play, he would let you know. He had some amazing calls at the end of the games when Jazz would win in the last seconds. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and everybody felt like they knew the guy. He was kind of like everybody's uncle here in Utah. Just because you were so familiar with him, seeing him on television, hearing him on the radio every single day, you felt like you knew the guy. Even people who never met him,
right?
And a lot of people did meet him through all of his, you know, community events and junior jazz and just, you know, meeting him at the arena and the Delta Center.
He'd walk around downtown all the time. You could go up to him, shake hands, and he would talk to you.
Yeah. So, beloved figure, he retired in 2009, stepped down. That's when David Locke took over the play-by-play duties on the radio for the Utah Jazz. They renamed the press room. I thought this was neat. It was an event I got to go out to. I've actually got a picture somewhere of me and Hot Rod from the night they dedicated the press room at Energy Solutions Arena, the Hot Rod Hundley Media Center. They've got all of his old memorabilia, pictures, quotes. It's really cool. Really a great tribute to the man. I didn't know this about him. I knew that he was a great player at West Virginia, had a decent career in the NBA, and I didn't know that he was involved in a plane crash. Did you hear about this?
No, I didn't know that.
The Minneapolis Lakers were flying somewhere. This is in 1960, so he would have been 26 years old. And their plane went down in an Iowa cornfield. And they were all okay, luckily. And apparently, once the plane came to a stop and everybody looked around and realized they were all in one piece, he said, "I live to love again." I could just hear Hot Rod saying that, even a young Hot Rod.
Yeah.
And luckily he did. I mean, thankfully for all of us fans, we got to enjoy him for years and years and years after that.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, legendary partier too.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, there's stories out there.
I think everybody in Salt Lake City in the 90s has a story partying with Hot Rod Hundley.
Yeah?
Oh, absolutely.
In the 80s and 90s, probably.
Oh, yeah.
I remember somebody, a former colleague, saying upon hearing of his passing, they say, you know, me and Hot Rod, we closed a lot of bars in our time. Because apparently he liked to go out. He liked to socialize,
absolutely.
Have a few.
Yeah, after the jazz games, he wouldn't go home. No, he'd go to a sports bar afterwards and hang out.
Apparently well beyond last call.
From what I've heard, I was too young at the time to go, but from what I've heard, yeah, absolutely. But he's Hot Rod Hundley. You can go after last call.
So he had a good run. I see, I've been very fortunate in my life because, as I mentioned, listened to Hot Rod at an early age. I lived in Los Angeles for many, many years. And I don't know if I fully appreciated it at the time, but there were just legends on the radio calling all the sports teams, radio and TV. Vin Scully the LA Dodgers. I mean, that just was the sound of summer. You turn on the Dodger game and hear, you know, Vin Scully talking about, you know, Farmer John hot dogs.
Well, I'm not even a Dodgers fan, but if there's a Dodger game on MLB Network and Vin's on the call, I'll watch it, man.
He's just the best.
Absolutely.
He's witty, he's smart, he's subtle. He doesn't feel the need to talk nonstop all the time and just, you know, step on every single moment. He will pause. He will let a game have pace and breathe. He respects the big moments. When there's a game-winning home run, he will shut up for, you know, 10, 15, 20 seconds and let the moment unfold on the field, let you hear the crowd roar, things like that. So we had Vin Scully. We also had Chick Hearn calling the Lakers games. Chick Hearn and Stu Lance. Talk about a legendary pair. Chick Hearn, the L.A. equivalent of Hot Rod Hundley. I mean, and Chick actually taught Hot Rod the ropes back when Hot Rod was first getting into broadcasting. He's the one who told him what to do. He's I don't know if you're familiar with Chick Hearn, but another guy, old school character, had a million catchphrases and kind of quirky, but just beloved by everybody in Southern California. And same type of thing. He did it for years and years and years, and everybody just felt like they knew him. Chick Hearn was like, you know, your best friend, even if you never met the man.
No, that's great. I've never met Chick Hearn, but I wish I had.
And also Bob Miller calling the LA Kings games. The best in the business at calling hockey. Miller and Nick Nixon.
See, that's my dream job, Rick, is play-by-play for a hockey team at any professional level. That's my dream job.
You could maybe get a peewee play-by-play job, go up to Steiner Ice Center up at the U.
Or up at the U or up at the Bountiful Bubble, call some high school games.
There you go. You gotta start somewhere, right?
I do. I just don't want to.
Well, if you ever do it and you ever get fired, as I have... Well, I don't know. You leave jobs for various reasons, you know. Don't do like Ennis.
No.
Walk away with your head held high.
I have left jobs wanting to do what Ennis did, but I haven't.
Because you know what? It doesn't do you any good. Because all you do, you're just screwing yourself in the end. I mean, it's an impulse at the moment you want to do it. I've wanted to do it. I understand everybody who has done it. But it's like you want to say, screw you. You suck. Your organization sucks. I'm better off without this place and, you know, have a nice life. See ya, you know, and toss your, you know, papers up as you walk out the door. That doesn't do you any good. That just makes you look like an idiot and bitter and petty. And that's the last thing, no matter how long you worked somewhere and how well of a job you did, the last image people are going to have is you being escorted to the front door with security, kicking and screaming and ranting like a lunatic.
But what a great story for your coworkers to tell everybody for the next 15, 20 years.
Yeah, that you were a jackass. That's what you would be remembered.
Absolutely.
Remember Rick Aaron? Oh, that jackass that got fired and kicked out of here? Yeah. No, it just doesn't do you any good. I remember a story, a guy that I worked with. He was an intern at my station in Los Angeles. And I won't say the kid's name, but he got a job, kind of a lower level, entry level job with Fox Sports Network. When Fox Sports Net was starting up in the early 90s in Los Angeles. And he worked there for, I don't know, 6 months or something. And it didn't work out for whatever reason. And they decided to let him go. And they said, okay, you know what? Thanks for everything. Friday's going to be your last day. You know, when you're done, turn in your badge and everything. So he gets on his computer and writes a scathing email about the entire organization from the top down, from David Hill, the president of Fox Sports, all the way down through the mid-level managers, down to his coworkers, production assistants, highlight supervisors, interns, and everything. And then he signs his name to it, and he hits send all. Because I know this because I had other friends that worked there too. So he thought, like, hey, I'm going to show them. I'm going to say, you know, here's why you guys are low in the ratings. Here's why you will never be ESPN. You want to try to do this and this. You have failed at this. You've not established this. You do this wrong and this and this and this and this. And he sent it out. And the response from 99% of the people who got that email, who's this guy? I don't know him. You ever heard of him? Oh, he sounds like a lunatic. Oh, glad he's gone.
So, yeah, absolutely. It's just so hard to do it these days because everybody is so connected with everything. If somebody in New York says something bad about the Jazz, it's on any social media network out there within seconds.
Oh, Twitter.
Of it, and
yeah.
Then it blows up like a wildfire. You've got it now.
Yeah, I mean, you could say something, and I've never said anything bad about a former employer. I mean, publicly, maybe privately is a different matter. But you got to be careful. And I certainly wouldn't say it if I'm looking out and I'm seeing a dozen reporters and five television cameras pointed at me. I think I would just kind of clam up and say the right thing at that point.
You would kind of have to, right? And I bet you, I guarantee you, on that flight back to Oklahoma City or Phoenix, wherever the Thunder are off to next, that somebody was in Cantor's ear the majority of that flight, coaching him on how to handle himself in the media from here on out.
Well, these guys have access to advisors, both from the league and the team, and they should have their personal staff. You know, their agent should serve as kind of a publicist and tell them what to do and what not to do. He either didn't get the advice or he didn't take the advice because he's just stubborn and he's an idiot.
Well, so is Cantor's agent, so that's pretty bright.
You've
get
said
the
that
advice.
Twice now. Is his agent known as some kind of a tool?
He is a tool. Yeah, absolutely. At least in Utah, he's known as a tool. I don't know how he's imaged around the league or around other agencies, but.
All right. Well, Ennis is gone, which is probably a good thing. Hot Rod is gone, which is definitely a bad thing. 80 years old. Called the Jazz games for 35 years. Always funny, always engaging, always entertaining, and he will be missed.
Stockton with a ball, front court left. He looks to Karl Malone. He's got him low. The mailman jumps it. Shot up. It's in. He did it. He did it. John Stockton to Karl Malone.
Now, as I mentioned a few moments ago, the NCAA basketball tournament building toward a crescendo of the Final Four in Indianapolis. The Utah Utes. They made a good run. They reached the Sweet 16. They went up against Duke on a recent Friday night in Houston. And I didn't think it was a great showing for Utah. I thought this was maybe the first time on a huge national stage, primetime audience, taking on a premier opponent. And they turned the ball over way too much. They couldn't hit a shot to save their lives at the beginning of the game. And I thought that maybe the national response, if you're a, college basketball fan on the East Coast or something, haven't seen the Utes play until that game, you thought like, oh, what's the big deal about these guys? You know, how did they get this far? You know?
Yeah. The Utah Utes didn't look too good against Duke. Duke didn't look too good against the U of U either. I've watched a lot of Duke games this year, and that was probably by far one of their worst games that they've played. Utah couldn't throw the ball in the ocean. They couldn't make a layup. They couldn't get the ball across half court. They turned the ball over 100 times.
I mean, yeah, it was almost comical. I was watching at a bar in Salt Lake City with a bunch of Utes fans, and it was like, you couldn't believe that some of the turnovers were just like junior Jazz level.
Oh, absolutely. Now,
just like turn and throw a pass and miss the guy by 5.5 feet and throw it into the second row.
Yeah, the passing was just atrocious for the Utes that night.
Was it because they were playing in a football stadium? It was a huge, cavernous place, and neither team could shoot, especially for the first 10 minutes of the game. And it was the only regional site. And now the Carrier Dome in Syracuse is also a football stadium. It's a huge place, obviously, too. But they've gone to this model of having the Final Four in a huge football stadium, like an 80,000-seat stadium, when they put in the bleachers on the sides to have basketball there. The reason why Houston was hosting a regional, this was their dress rehearsal because they host the Final Four next year in 2016. And as kind of a run-through, they always host a regional final before they put the Final Four there. But I don't know if it had to do with the stadium, but Utah, to their credit, did fight back. They cut a 15-point lead down to just, I think it was 5. Maybe they got it within 3 toward the end. But then the finish of this game was really amazing. And you got to wonder what was going on here with the point spread. Duke was favored by 5 points. All right. They play 40 minutes of basketball. Should I say 39 minutes and 59
point eight
seconds. And it's a 5-point game. It's 62 to 57. And Duke has the ball. And it's going to be a push, right? And most of the money came in on Duke. The national money, people thought Duke was going to cover the 5 points. So they bet big on Duke. So they're up by five. It's looking like it's going to be a push. Duke has the ball. Utah is slapping at the guy's arms, you know, trying to get a foul, and the horn blows. It's over. They start to walk off the court. 62-57. They put the final score up on the screen. So it's a push, right? But wait, not so fast, my friend, as Lee Corso would say. The officials go and they look at it and determine that a foul had been committed with, what, 0.3 seconds left?
Yep.
And Duke goes to the line for two more free throws. The guy misses the first and then hits the second. Duke wins by six, 63-57, and the sports books got hammered on that. They said their losses on that one controversial free throw in the millions.
Well, yeah, it does definitely make you wonder if officials are aware of point spreads and if officials are betting on games or whatever. In my own personal opinion, the officials don't know the spreads. They don't bet on games. But it does definitely make you wonder. There's a good argument there when stuff like this happens.
It reminded me of, and refresh my memory, Utah playing USC in football. And there was a very controversial finish where a guy, what happened, returned an interception?
It was a blocked field goal.
That's it.
Returned for an interception.
And it affected the point spread.
Returned for a touchdown.
After the final whistle.
Correct. And Lane Kiffin went to the officials after the game and made them count that touchdown.
Because they
blew it dead.
Yeah.
They blew it dead. And then Lane Kiffin says, no, that's a touchdown. We want our points.
So USC covered the spread.
Exactly. So USC gets the points, and they end up covering the spread.
So what if you're that Ute fan who maybe likes to lay a little wager on the game, and you put down, you know, next month's mortgage payment on the Utes against USC, whenever that was. What was that, 2013, 2012?
2012,
maybe?
I think.
And you lose like that. And it's like, yeah, I think it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Like, I will never get screwed like that again. But then you bet on the Utes plus five against Duke in the Sweet 16.
And they get lost by six because of the officials. Well, it's just such a – it just puts Lane Kiffin's douchebaggery in cement that he would go to the officials. You've already won the game. You've already scored more points than the Utes did. And you go to the officials after the game and say, that's a touchdown, put the points on the board. Come on, bro. You've already won the game.
Wasn't his status as a douchebag already well established before that and well, after that?
And it continues to be even more so.
With
absolutely.
Alabama. I mean, that's...
What a perfect fit. Oh, my goodness.
I hate the Crimson Tide. I hate Nick Saban. And I hate Lane Kiffin.
What a perfect fit for Lane Kiffin to be at Alabama.
Oh, God. I can't stand the guy. I don't know him personally, but okay, first of all, his dad is a great coach, mm-hmm. Monty Kiffin.
Yeah.
I don't think Lane is a great coach. I think he's a charismatic guy who is a good recruiter. I think he grew up in dad's shadow, and I think he got opportunities that other people didn't get because of who his dad was. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't like the way he was with the Raiders. I don't like the way he was with Tennessee, the way he left Tennessee.
He left the car running at his press conference in Tennessee when he was leaving
for
weasel. USC.
And then I didn't like at USC. Obviously, I'm a UCLA fan, full disclosure. But I thought he was a complete weasel at USC, the way he dealt with the media and stuff. He would berate guys who, you know, he didn't like what they wrote or what they said about mm-hmm. him and his program. He would shut the media out of practices, which is basically shutting your fans out of what's going on with your program. And then, you know.
And then he leaves. Well, I love he gets fired on the tarmac. That's perfect. I love it. I usually feel bad for when people lose their job or whatever. The dude's a millionaire. The dude's a douchebag. He doesn't even get to go on the plane. He's fired on the tarmac. That's phenomenal for him to get fired that way. And then he ends up at Alabama.
Lands on his feet. Have you ever thought this when watching that Lane Kiffin is like a little bit off? I don't know what it is, but just, I mean, like slightly autistic or something. He doesn't quite connect with the person he's having the conversation with.
I don't know if he's off. I just think that's how he's such a big fan of Lane Kiffin.
Well, obviously.
That he just doesn't want to connect with anybody else. You can't be on Lane Kiffin's level.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mean to take a little detour down the Kiffin lane, but, you know, so March Madness. So Kentucky has reached the Final Four in Indianapolis after surviving a crazy game against Notre Dame. And it's just a heartbreaker for those Irish players. I mean, they put up such a great effort and took Kentucky down to the very brink. And so Kentucky advances. I don't like the way Notre Dame handled the time. I don't like the way Mike Bray handled the end of the game there. Because I think they had the ball with an opportunity to have a 2-for-1 possession at the end of the game. They didn't do that.
Yeah.
And as a result, Kentucky got the final two free throws to go up. And then I didn't like the last – I mean, granted, there wasn't much time, but Jerian Grant just kind of takes the ball himself coast to coast, gets forced into the corner, and puts up an off-balance shot. You certainly want a better look than that with a chance to go to the Final Four on the line. So I thought a great effort by the players, kind of – mismanaged in the final moments of that game. As a result, Kentucky is going to Indianapolis at, 38-0 now. The other regional, Wisconsin defeated Arizona. Wisconsin, Bo Ryan's team, looks really, really good. They will meet Kentucky in the semifinals. We just had Michigan State advance by beating Louisville in the regional final. And as we record this right now, Duke taking on Gonzaga. I think Duke was up early. Looks like the Blue Devils might go. So maybe, I don't know, Duke, Kentucky in the finals?
In my bracket, yeah, absolutely.
I have Duke beating Kentucky in the final just because I couldn't stomach taking the Wildcats because everybody else was taking the Wildcats.
I couldn't stomach taking Duke, but somebody had to take down Kentucky. Why not beat Duke?
Yeah, so that's what's going on. I guess we're at the Final Five right now. By the time we finish recording this, maybe Duke will have made it to the Final Four, or maybe Gonzaga comes out. Gonzaga's a great team. I mean, people...
I hate Gonzaga.
I don't think people realize how good they are.
They are good, but they're just like the little brother that you just want to go away because they're so annoying.
I don't think they are little brother.
See, I hate them. I'm not even a BYU fan, and I hate Gonzaga.
It's been like 20 years that they have been a major national player. Now, they are a small school that plays in a small conference, so there still is this tendency to think of them as, you know, like the Cinderella or the mid-major upstart or whatever, but they are a legit program.
Well, no, they've had a great team this year and in past years too, and it's great to see them in the Elite Eight going against a great team of Duke. It's great for them. I just cheer for Duke.
So that is what's going on in hoops. Dave, you want to play a round of sport, not a sport?
Absolutely.
All right, it's been my turn to come up. Dave came up with all of the categories last week, all of the suggestions. I came up with these. Let's start off with, this is one of the more artistic athletic competitions out there, rhythmic gymnastics. You don't see it often until the Olympics roll around once every 4 years, but this is the gymnasts with the ribbons.
Oh, they can use props.
And the balls, and they dance, they prance, they twirl their ribbons, they toss the ball in the air, they do a flip, they catch it. It's not gymnastics, it's rhythmic gymnastics. Sport or not a sport?
Is it judged?
Yes, it is judged.
So it's judged. Well,
it's judged.
It's an activity.
It's done to music. It involves ribbons.
And rhythm.
And rhythm.
I'll go with activity, not a sport.
I say not a sport. You're judged on it. I can watch two people do their floor routine in rhythmic gymnastics, watch the entire thing, and then have no idea who did better. I got to wait till a judging panel puts up their scores to know that this person did better than this person. Doesn't happen in football or basketball.
No.
Because I know from watching there is an objective scoring system. What about darts? This is a barroom game, and you know, we think of it as just, you know, hey, night out with the fellas, just killing some time at the local tavern. But you go to Europe, and it's on TV.
It's on TV
here. They know all the people, and they follow this.
Yeah. Yeah, darts is a big thing. It's becoming even bigger. I like shooting or throwing darts. I love darts, and I have watched it on TV.
What?
Yes.
How do you watch darts on TV?
It was on, I think it was on Fox Sports.
Well, I know
Fox
how Sports you would Regional. Watch it, but why would you watch it?
Because it was 2:30 in the morning on a Saturday.
That's there's nothing, else,
there's nothing
on.
Else on.
It was an infomercial for Time Life soft rock hits of the 70s or a darts match.
And darts wins. Darts is a sport. Absolutely.
Well, it is a sport because there's a skill involved and there's a scoring system, and you can see who is doing better than who. I'm just flabbergasted. I spent some time in Europe, and they have it on in TVs in the bar there, and they're watching, and they know it. They know what's going on. Oh,
they're gambling on it.
Yeah, but they like, yeah, oh yeah, that's Nigel. Oh, he's undefeated this year, mate. Oh, nobody's taking him down. I'm like, you know who these guys are? Kind of like, I don't know, maybe like we would know golfers. They all have their own individual, you know, personalities and their skill sets and stuff. And
do they play darts. Fantasy darts?
I'm sure it exists. Dart league? It must exist over there. What about this? Lawn darts. Now, this is a little bit different. This is when you're having a picnic and you throw down the hula hoops for targets or whatever, and you throw these, you know, missiles up in the air and try to hit targets with them. And they're dangerous, first of all. I mean, you talk about a good way to get impaled.
I've never heard of lawn darts.
What?
Yeah.
David, get out of here. Everybody's heard of lawn darts. It's a game.
It's a game. All right. It's a game.
Okay, think about it as like, I don't know, the equivalent, croquet or something like that.
Oh, I've heard of croquet.
Yeah, like you set up a little thing on the lawn in the summertime and you sip lemonade and you play it to pass the time. But the thing is, these points, in order for them to go up in the ground, you throw them at a high trajectory. They're weighted on the front and they're sharp as hell. So you don't want any little kids or pets around when you're tossing these things because, I mean, they can be lethal.
Lawn darts.
Yeah.
Sure, that sounds like a fun sport.
Well, there's a scoring system.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it sounds like
you get
it.
To the target or in the target, so I guess, you know, lawn darts. Okay, how about tiddlywinks?
Tiddlywinks?
Have you heard of tiddlywinks?
I have heard of tiddlywinks.
Do you know what the game entails? It sounds almost obscene.
Not fully. I don't think I understand it fully.
It's a game. Yeah, you know, it's a, I guess, a kid's game. You could play it as an adult, but it involved a little plastic cup and these little plastic discs known as tiddlywinks. And you would press down with one disc on the edge of another disc to flip it up in the air and try to land it into the cup.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about.
It just has such a funny name.
It does have a funny name.
Have you met Mr. Tiddlywinks? Lovely chap.
Sipping his tea.
Just moved in down the block. It almost sounds obscene. Like, hey, did you see that?
Is there a competitive?
See that drunk girl over there? Just showed me her tiddlywinks. No, it's competitive. Yeah, you play, and you have different colors. Somebody's yellow, somebody's red, somebody's green, and you try to get them in the cup. I guess whoever gets the most of their color in the cup is the champion tiddlier.
Can it be an activity? It's sport, not a sport. I get that, but can we put in sport, not a sport, or activity?
It's a cop out, but you can say that. it's a game. Is
it's
what
a game.
It is.
Okay, yeah. It's a game.
All right, I'll agree with you. It is a game. Although I'm sure it's televised somewhere. And if Dave is bored enough at 2:30 in the morning on a Saturday,
I'm going to text you at 2:30.
You better not.
Channel 612. It's on.
What about this? What about CrossFit? People get into this. It's a workout system. You do all these sort of things. And I'm sure, I haven't looked this up, but there's probably been CrossFit competitions.
Yeah, there is. They're televised.
And they're televised. So it's a sport. I guess, would those be judged? Or there's no point system
you
or
know,
whatever?
You know, I don't know how a CrossFit competition is won.
Do we really need to sit around on our fat butts and watch other people work out on TV?
Well, people that are watching these are competing in them. So they're already in the stadium. So why even have it on TV?
Well, no, I mean,
who's watching them?
There's people who do this, I guess. You go to your local gym. I don't know. I don't do it, obviously. But some people like to go work out and do CrossFit, but they get really into it. It's like a cult.
Yeah.
And then once they're doing it, they want to watch, I guess, other people do it and see, you know, how well they do it or whatever. I don't know.
I don't know how I don't know if it's judged or
it
if it's timed.
Well, how? I don't think there's.
Well, isn't there like little obstacles that they have to go through?
I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it's a race against the clock.
I don't know. It's neither.
Okay, what about this? This is something that goes on this show sometimes. Debate. Because you have kids who play football in high school, you have kids who play basketball, kids who run track, and then you have kids who are on the debate team. And they go to competitions, they train, they practice, they compete against other schools, and they are given awards and trophies for winning. Is debate a sport?
Debate?
It's not athletic.
It's not athletic at all.
You can, you're just using your mind and your mouth and your
right.
words.
There's
and your
a mediator. Are there judges? Are there points awarded by an official at a debate?
Yeah, they are judged. There's a winner. There's a loser. There's a first, second, third place, and so on.
But who gives out points? Is it like an official?
You were judged.
So you're judged. So,
so
it's
you
not a
argue
sport.
With somebody, and then you are judged on how well you do, and you are, you know, either you either
I say
win
it's
or lose.
Not a sport.
I say it's not a sport either because it is judged. Although, kind of, as a married person, you're kind of engaged in a daily debate. I don't know. I mean, and without a judge, you don't have anybody to step in and say who won and who lost.
No, we can't bring the outsiders in.
I think I'm like 0 for 2,347. I don't know about your marriage. I don't think I've ever won a debate. A couple more for you here. Race walking. Okay.
Like the people at the mall?
Yeah, but this is a sport. People have races. And
so there's a beginning and an end.
Yeah, but I just don't know how you – there's some rule. I'd love to have it explained to me sometime. What defines walking as opposed to trotting or jogging?
Trotting.
It looks really silly when these people are doing it. I mean, the tops of their bodies are just going, you know, like you know, 90
well,
miles an hour,
too.
And their feet are
yeah,
just like
absolutely.
Scurrying along.
It's entertaining. I guess. It is entertaining because I have seen people do it. If there's a beginning and an end, like a finish line, and there's a clock or whatever, or if you're just competing against others, you're not being judged on your performance, right?
But what if you break into a trot? Disqualified? You lose?
You would have to be.
You're going too fast. You weren't walking.
You're not walking. You're trotting.
What about cooking? Now, this sounds weird, but we are in this era where there are so many cooking shows and cooking competitions on the air. It's almost like cooking has become a sport.
Well,
Top Chef, Master Chef, Food Network.
Chopped. I love Chopped. I love watching cooking competitions. It's entertaining for me, and you can learn a lot about just cooking and how to just get your palate a little bit more educated.
Technique. If we learn about new ingredients, new techniques,
yeah,
how they do these things. It's fascinating.
I don't think it's a sport because you can prepare this amazing plate of food, but you have to give it to a judge who has a different palate than you do that has to judge your food against somebody else's food that's coming in too.
And talk about subjective. I mean,
absolutely.
100 people could taste the same exact dish and
yep.
give you 100 different opinions, ranging from this is the greatest thing ever made to this is total crap and spit it out in the garbage can. So yeah, it's judged, it's subjective, it's not a sport. One more final one for you. This is a game I've heard referenced many times. I don't think I've ever actually seen it played. Grab ass. Or as the French call it, grabass. Have you ever been accused of playing grab ass?
I never got accused, but I was damn good at it.
it's just become this term for like, you know, loafing, goofing off, wasting time. Like you're at the job site and like, hey, you guys done yet? Well, we would be done, but the electricians are playing grab ass over there.
we usually say that about the plumbers.
The plumbers. See? You would have been done 2 days ago, but the plumber is playing grab ass over there.
It's a sport, absolutely. It's got a lot of technique to it to make sure you don't get caught by your foreman.
I've never played grab ass. I don't really know what it is other than, you know,
well, you're a professional, so you wouldn't.
But one time I was accused. Now, this is a true story. Okay, I was at a UCLA football game many, many years ago. And I was on the sideline. I was working for a TV station down there. I had my media pass. But I knew one of the cheerleaders for UCLA, the young lady that I knew from school. And she was down there. So I saw her. I went over. I said hello. She started chatting with me, you know. And I talked to some of her friends. They're other members of the cheerleading squad. And I had the security guard come over. Now, you can just imagine the guy that I'm talking about. We all know the type. He's about 6'2", about 270 pounds. Not a good 270, you know?
A soft 270?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's probably like the former high school football player, and you know, things haven't gone well in the 20 years since he's been out. So now he's wearing a yellow windbreaker and working security on the sidelines at a game. And he comes over and he's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" I'm like, "Hey, I work for the TV station. I'm covering the game." He's like, "Well, you can't be over here playing grab ass with the cheerleaders." I thought it was kind of funny because I wasn't playing grab ass with the cheerleaders. I was just talking to some friends, people that I knew. And I was, you know, it was during a timeout or something like that. But apparently somebody saw it from up above in the press box or something and radioed down to security, said, "Hey, who is that guy? What's he doing? Go check him out," or whatever. But I was thinking, if I was playing grab ass, wouldn't that be the ultimate venue for it? I mean, with, you know, 24 UCLA cheerleaders and a crowd of like 75,000 people at the Rose Bowl, that would be like the Super Bowl of grab ass.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a perfect venue.
Welcome to the Super Bowl of grab ass. All right. So grab ass, not a sport, obviously. No scoring system, not judged, no points awarded, no winner. We're all losers in this conversation. All right. We're going to wrap up with an Enes Kanter edition of Tweets of the Week. Of course, the Twitter sphere went nuts when Enes's comments were broadcast here in the state of Utah. Jimbo Slice. Do you follow this guy? At Jimbo Running. Very funny individual.
Yeah, I see him on my timeline occasionally.
He says, "Kanter was frustrated here for the last 3.5 years. Join the club." I think Jazz fans were frustrated with Enes for 3.5 years.
Well, we were just frustrated with him and just with the organization too, because we didn't like how it was going.
Go Cougars on Twitter tweeted out, "Is it mere coincidence that Enes Kanter is only a few letters off from penis cancer?" I think not.
You know, there's a lot of penis on my timeline last night.
What? Hey, the way you want to use Twitter is up to you, all right? But I don't think it belongs here on the Jocularity Show. You even made Tweets of the Week, though.
Oh, my.
At David Wilbur. Follow him if you don't already. On Twitter, you can follow me at Rick Aaron. Dave tweeted out, "Jazz give their game ball to Enes Kanter." See, that was a good one. You're still cracking yourself up.
Oh, I love that one.
After the Jazz got fired up and beat the Thunder. David Deckard, at Dave Deckard on Twitter, said, "The Barry Kanter tales are setting Twitter aflame tonight, though." Which is, you know, a little twist on Chaucer, the Canterbury tales, right? The Barry Kanter tales here in Utah.
That one's for the educated.
Yeah. Tony Parks, at Tony Parks Zone. Now, this guy is a very good radio host out here in Utah on 1280 The Zone. He says, "I like Enes Kanter a lot, but his comments today reminded me of why the Jazz had to move him. He showed his immaturity and unprofessionalism." Which is true.
It is true. Yeah.
He's just a big, goofy kid from Turkey. He has a lot of growing up to do.
Absolutely.
Maybe he'll do it. Maybe he'll mature. Maybe he'll get the right people around him or something. Or maybe he'll just be, you know, like, I don't know, loose cannon his whole career. Jeremiah Jensen, sports reporter for KSL Television at JJ Sports Beat, says, "Enes Kanter embracing the villain role. He's watched way too much pro wrestling. He knows the NBA isn't fake, right?" Which I thought was a great tweet.
No, and absolutely.
It was like one of those wrestling things, you know, one of those fake interviews, which were always so comical, you know.
Well, even him walking out at the lineups with his hands up in the air and then behind his ears. Yeah, absolutely.
David Locke, at Locked On Sports, Jazz play-by-play man. "Jazz five starters recognized 4 of the Thunder starters at the tip circle, completely ignored Kanter." Ooh, a slap in the face. Bill Oram, at Bill Oram, former Jazz beat writer, now covering the Lakers, I believe, says, "Enes Kanter is a wonderful, charismatic dude, but his post-Utah attitude and behavior is not particularly becoming. People are going to notice this. Everybody in NBA personnel departments and the league hears these comments, reads these comments, and they're not going to have the same opinion of Enes Kanter." Finally, another one from Jimbo Slice, at Jimbo Rudding, tweeted out, "Even Derek Fisher heard Kanter's comments and was like, 'Dang, son, that's low.' And then he lied to get out of another contract." So that kind of brings it full circle here, tying in Derek Fisher and Enes Kanter. So That's going to do it for this edition of the Jocularity Show. For the executive producer and grand poobah of the Earhole Media Network, Sasha Bloom, and my co-host David Wilbur, I'm Rick Aaron, and we will see you later.